Jamal Murray returns from injury this season. How can he get off to a better start than ever, even with the injury, to maybe make a push for an all-star position this season? That and more on Locked On Nuggets.
You are Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Thanks for making us your first listen each and every day. We're free and available on all platforms, including YouTube, where you can join folks. Alec Gwynn's in with us. Hey, Alec, what's up, man? Hurricane's obviously in with us as always. Rayvon is here. Lots of folks in the chat. Make sure to turn on notifications and hit the like button. Subscribe on YouTube, and you can join the show live with us. If you missed it, as you're listening to this, I did record an episode last night on Tuesday night talking about MPJ and a number of topics. I actually was planning on doing this before my friend Tony Jones from The Athletic decided to rile folks up. So you can go listen to, if you're looking for thoughts on that, go check out last night's episode because we got other things that are on the docket for today on a
Wednesday. You talked about that last night? You talked about them?
I did. I was like, I was going to do an MPJ episode anyway because it was just rattling around my head because I did a Most Improved Player podcast on buckets over the Action Network, and we obviously talked about MPJ a lot. So I was thinking about MPJ a lot yesterday anyway, and then I was like, I'm going to do this. And then right as I was getting ready to log on, I saw Tony doing Tony's thing and was like, well, we'll just talk about this on the show as well. So I talked about kind of my thoughts on that as well.
I'll share a perspective since I was somewhat involved in it. I just saw the take from him online. He said, you know, Michael Porter's not an elite shooter. You know, I obviously think that he is and said I disagree with him. You know, he full disclosure, he's coming on DNVR Nuggets tomorrow. We had him arranged to be on a guest like last week. I had scheduled him out. I like Tony Jones a lot. This is not like a contentious thing by any means. 90% of our arguments online, in my opinion, Matt, are semantic ones. Yeah. Like his definition of what an elite shooter is somebody that can do it and has proven to do it under pressure, under the highest stakes. Like, of course, Michael Porter hasn't really done that. He's had a couple of high-profile shots that he's hit in the clutch in playoff games. So he does have some of that. But if your thing is, like, are you sure he's going to do that to the level Klay Thompson has done that back against the one plus? Like, no. But to me, that's just a different definition. Yes. So, again, it's always just how you define it. To me, Michael Porter has played two seasons. In those two seasons, he has been an elite shooter. And that's – so, like, it's one of those things where it wasn't worth going back and forth with because it's just defining things differently.
Thanks so much for taking my entire second segment from last night and distilling it into 60 seconds. Appreciate that. So, if you want to hear, like, a longer version of what Adam just said very succinctly and well in 60 seconds, go check out yesterday's episode. On today's show, we're going to talk about Jamal Murray. We were coming up with topics to get us through these dog days of the summer before training camp starts next month. Can you believe it? A month and a half, and we're going to be back into basketball. But we're trying to think of topics. And one of the ones that I really wanted to deep dive into was talk about Jamal Murray and why it is that a player that is so well-regarded by Nuggets fans, Nuggets media, honestly, the national media is very high on him. We all consider Jamal to be a very high-level player, and not just because he had the performance in the bubble. He was well-regarded before that and had great games after that, before the injury. So why is it that a player of that caliber is never really talked about in the months of October, November, December? Why is it that a player of that caliber has not only never made an all-star team, but very seldom, I can think maybe once, that he was in serious consideration for making an all-star team? Why is it that there's this gap? And you've talked about this before, you talk a lot about, like, look, like, Devin Booker was an MVP candidate last season. Yeah. And the gap between Devin Booker and Jamal Murray, based off of their skill set, performance level, etc., should not be that wide. And yet, has to be at this point, given what Devin's accomplished. And unfortunately, like, Jamal's been impacted by the injury, which has kept him out of two playoff runs.
What has Devin accomplished, though, that Jamal hasn't? I mean, only, you know, going one round further, obviously, that would be it. But, okay, and if that's the difference, I get it.
Suns fans feel he's the best player on a team that went to the finals.
I mean, they're probably right. He's either the best player or closer to the best player than Jamal is to Nikola.
And Adam, and I would say that the All-Star appearances, like that, just getting there, like it is a tangible accomplishment, right? And like Devin's been all NBA too, if you want to go that route, because I always care about all NBA more.
Where was his first? Where was his first All-Star and all NBA? Was it this year or was it last year?
I think it was last year. I believe it was last year. I will look that up real quick while we're talking. Why do you ask?
I'm just wondering, like, part of my point when I'm trying to compare those two is just saying that the last time they were both healthy, to me, they were comparable players.
Ooh, that's
interesting. But 1 year, obviously, like, Jamal Murray has had no momentum over the last year and a half. Devin Booker has a lot of momentum over the last year and a half. So that it's just more about extrapolating where they are.
Devin's actually a three-time All-Star. 2020, 2021, and 2022. He has only one All NBA appearance. So, but the point is, why is it that gap exists? And
do you see it as a big gap?
I think at this point, there's a couple of things here. There's skill and talent, and I'm trying to think of the word. There's level of player, right? If just to sum that up, and then there like tier. If we're just talking about like what these players can do, maybe here's the best way to put it. Devin Booker is a more accomplished player at this point. Like
because of the All-Star and All-NBA selections?
Yeah, like that stuff matters, I think. Is it not to you?
It does, but they're also imperfect.
They are for sure. But I would also say that like this is part of what we get into. Jamal's not just – he's not bad in these first early months, I would say. But he is quiet. And Devin,
consistency is big. Yep.
And that's a big part of this is, and now one thing that people, that both Nuggets fans and people close to the Nuggets have pointed out to me is like, well, which would you rather? Would you rather he be quiet, he'd be great in October, or would you rather he be great in the playoffs? And that's a very meaningful question. Like, that's an important one. Like, you'd rather have, like, that's why, honestly, today's discussion, to a certain degree, has like it has to be taken with a bit of nuance. It shouldn't be like the priority for Jamal Murray should not be, especially the season coming off the injury, should not be trying to have his best basketball in October, November, December.
That's what's funny about it. He starts slow, and this is the ultimate year where everyone both expects, and maybe he should start slow. So he's not going to answer the consistency thing, I don't think, right out of the gate this year.
So, like, here's an interesting question, and this is well put by Brandon here. I feel like Jamal has been kind of on cruise control in the first half of the season, but as the playoffs come around, that's when he turns up. And that's I think that's accurate. I don't know that cruise control is the right word for it, though.
I think if you
ask Jamal if he wants to be an All-Star, he'd be like, yes. Like, that's right. Absolutely something I want. So the question then is, like, why is it that he is such a different player, it feels like, later in the year than he is early in the year? Not stylistically, but in terms of production, performance, and impact. I would say that he's been a much more impactful player after January is kind of when I think he starts to pick up, rather than those first early months of the season. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, every year for the last couple of years, that definitely was the case.
So if we agree that it's not a purpose, there's not an intention there, right? And also if we look at it and we go, you know, we remember how Jokic, like, this was a big thing. I remember coming into the first MVP season, we were like, well, he's going to start slow. He always starts slow. And then Joker was like, or, how about I be the best player in basketball from the very first game of the season and just do it every single game? Like, how about that, right? Like, that's such an important difference that Joker's made. Now, my question would be, I guess, through the context of this discussion, before we get into why in the next segment, is do you think that Jamal can. Is there anything to think that you, in your mind, besides the injury recovery this season, which is a major caveat at this point in time, beyond that, is there any reason why you would think that Jamal can't be a steady, impactful, high-level player from the first game of this, in a regular season context, from the beginning of the season through?
Do you want to answer that now?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell if that was a tease. Oh.
No.
The answer for me, there's a lot of things working against him this season. You mentioned the injury, so we'll just put that, like, the fact that he might not be playing a lot of minutes, might not be playing every minute, we'll put that in its own box, which is the biggest box, but we'll just set it aside. The other one is, this team is better than the last time he played, or at least more complete. And what I mean by that is Jokic more dominant. I feel like he's going to be more aggressive, all of those things. Michael Porter, Aaron Gordon's more integrated, KCP. There's less needed of Jamal, especially right out of the gate. So I do wonder, like, if Jamal comes out and just tries to be a high usage player right off the bat, it might actually be negative for the Nuggets in the short run as they're trying to, like, just win games and get to that January part of the schedule. So that's another factor here, is that I don't know that he needs to score 22 points a game for the Nuggets to be healthy.
Yeah, I think the discussion for this is less about the team health, because honestly, I guess I'm putting the cart way before the horse here when it comes to this Nuggets team. Because I honestly am kind of like, you know, they kind of have the luxury of being able to have their cake and eat it too. The team's going to be so good, like, you can focus on some of the individual stuff.
Right.
And that brings the question of how can Jamal, especially through the context of the injury recovery, how can he get off to a better start? Is there anything that we can kind of point to? And is it just one of those things, or is there a factor? And somebody's mentioned it in the comments, actually, which we'll get to after the break. And it's the same thing that people close to the Nuggets have said. We'll talk about that and more when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. But first, I've got to tell you about Bet Online. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your betting needs. Find all your favorite sports and events at the number one online source for odds, lines, and games. Find reviews and news of every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. I put in some most improved bets yesterday, as well as I have to start hedging because I kind of like the Commanders to win the NFC East. Commanders. And then I read the Carson Wentz reports and was like, oh God, hedge out of that. Hedge out of that as quickly as possible. But I'm not hedging with the Cowboys. I like the Eagles. I don't think the Cowboys are going to have a good season. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports wagering information, from live in-game betting, scores, and podcasts. They have you covered. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to learn more about the action happening today. BetOnline, where the game starts. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for joining us, making us part of your day. By the way, if you want to hear more from Adam and I, you can find us on Locked On NBA. I'm up on Tuesday, so I've got an episode already out earlier this week. We were recorded on Monday right after the KD trade demand went through, which Adam and I are going to talk about a little bit more in the third segment. It's me and David Ramil. I had lots of thoughts to get out because I was so frustrated with the situation. So if you want to hear me basically vexing about the absurdity of the Nets situation, go check out Locked On NBA, and you can find Adam on Fridays as well. All right, back here on Locked On NBA, talking about how it is that Jamal Murray can maybe get off to better starts in his career, both this season and going forward. And there's one key that somebody's brought up, is Ravon in the chat here. He says, I feel like he's more aggressive from three, especially talking about how he is later in the season. And that's absolutely right. Talking to somebody close to the Nuggets a few weeks ago, I did get kind of this impression. They were talking about how Jamal's approach early on in the season is to set up teammates, be a little bit more of a floor general, try and get everybody going, and also try and attack the rim more. He doesn't necessarily like... What's weird is, for a guy that has in plain sight said that Steph Curry was one of his favorite players.
Right.
He's and a guy that will take logo pull-up threes. He's honestly... And, like, he takes them in warm-ups every single time, right? Like, this is a shot that he clearly thinks about. He doesn't necessarily take a ton of them in game. That might be the influence of the coaching staff. That might just be Jamal being like, well, okay, it's a fun idea, but I mean, I'm not Steph. Even though, like, look, Jamal Murray's an incredible shooter. So this got me thinking about, like, what it is that actually does change between Jamal's early season and late season performance. And I looked at from 2017-18, which was the Game 82 season, right? They almost make the playoffs, through 2021 when he got hurt. What did before the All-Star break look like, and what did after the All-Star break look like? And the changes are honestly really pretty notable when you look at it, because in reality, he doesn't necessarily take more shots in general. He takes roughly the same amount of shots, but he does take and make a much higher percentage of threes. So he takes basically 0.6 more three-point attempts after the All-Star break. And he winds up making them at a much higher level. He shoots 39.8% after All-Star, 33.9% before All-Star. Now, this doesn't count January, when I think he's actually at his best, but I wasn't able to pull that data.
You think he peaks in January?
Not peaks. I think he starts to get going. Okay. I think he peaks in March.
Yeah.
And then, like, I mean, I think he peaks in May. Or
April, May.
Yeah, sure. Like, he's a playoff gamer, which is great because, you know, he struggled a lot in that Spurs series, and that was such a big moment for him. And we talked about this kind of like with Aaron Gordon the first time he's really challenged. And he responded in that Spurs series in the first playoff run, and that helped him in the second series versus the Blazers. And then he was obviously great the following season in the bubble. So what we have here is we have that he does take a lot more threes. And one thing that's kind of been reiterated to Jamal in the offseason has been that he should be more willing to take pull-up threes early in the season. And part of that is, as he's coming back from injury, he's going to – I want to get your thoughts on this. Do you think it's going to be easier for him from an injury recovery standpoint with the nervousness about landing on the knee that still comes for a while? Do you think that we saw the tough finish in one of the summer runs at UCLA the other day on YouTube or on Twitter.
Was that at UCLA?
Yeah, that was my understanding. That was at the UCLA run. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but that's what I saw. He was finishing through contact there. But in an NBA context, a good way for him to get his production up and his confidence is for him to simply focus on three-point shots, pull-ups, and catch-and-shoot early on in the season and focus on – because – there's a two-way impact here. It'll get his confidence and scoring going because once he hits one, he usually gets real hot. And two, even if he's missing, that gravity, teams are still going to respect Murray shooting those. They are. They're going to respect Murray shooting those threes. He has garnered that much respect around the league, and that's the gravity everyone talks about, which will open the floor for everybody else, which is such a sore point last season. It's amazing the Nuggets offense was as good as it was with so few gravity threats. Do you think that taking more threes, pull up and off the catch next season, is a good idea for Jamal Murray early on?
It's interesting because the numbers you're sharing kind of bear out the answer is yes. And I do think in general, more threes is better from your guard position, especially if you're capable of knocking them down. It's funny, the difference between Jamal and Bones in age is only like 4 or 5 years. I think it's four years. But it is enough that there's like a cultural gap between them, meaning that Jamal was already establishing who he was as a player when Steph Curry was at his peak. I don't know how old he was, 14, 15 years old. You know, you're already kind of developing your identity as a player. When Steph Curry arrived, I should say, Bones Highland, all of his developmental years came watching Steph Curry. And I just feel like that you see players at Jamal's age and younger more and more comfortable to chuck and say like, hey, I'm gunning for threes. Whereas Jamal feels like he's right at the cutoff. But I think that the answer is yes. Jamal's a really good, I think Jamal's game is, in the average person's view, I think it's a little misunderstood. If you ask people, what is Jamal good at? They'd say shooting, he's a shooter. Mm-hmm. And then he can play some pick and roll. I think he's actually just a better scorer with great footwork. Like, yeah. He's a little bit closer to not a DeRozan. He's a little bit closer to a Kobe than he is a Steph Curry, I think, stylistically.
Yeah, agreed.
And I think people don't really truly recognize that. Nonetheless, he is a great shooter, and I do think there are areas he can hunt for his three-point shot a little bit more.
Like, he's got that pivot pump fake underneath layup. He's got
great footwork. His footwork is extremely underrated.
Yeah, like he has absurd footwork, and that's not going to go away. Like, that's one thing that I don't ever remember anecdotally. I don't recall ever like seeing a player get injured and then be like, yeah, his footwork really fell off. Like, once you have good footwork,
when he was ramping up and we thought maybe he'll play, maybe he won't, like in the lead up to the playoffs, we saw him doing one-on-one workouts with coaches. Of course, he's going to cook those guys. But he was cooking them with elite footwork. Like, it looked like Kobe at an open run, you know, like where just defenders are jumping at the wrong shot fake or this or that, or he's spinning around him and getting wide open layups. Like, his footwork, I know for a fact it's not gone because I've seen him do it at least in one-on-one workouts.
Right. So, and this is kind of an interesting question if we put it from this perspective, because what we're talking about oftentimes, not always, like, you can have great footwork on like step backs off of a pick and roll, right? Which he's really good at. But, you know, kind of utilizing some of that stuff, but as well as also just like firing up more threes, we're talking about different, it's all within the context of basketball, right? It's all basketball. But we are talking a little bit more about catch and shoot opportunities and a little bit more ISO, especially if he catches the ball, kind of dribbles up and then takes a pull-up three, right? Which is less of pick and roll. I do kind of wonder if this is something to kind of consider if, because like pick and roll with Jokic and him is so much, it's just butter. It's peanut butter and jelly, right? It's butter and toast. Yeah. But I wonder if in order to get him through to kind of this approach early on in the season to get him going and to manage the injury recovery, if running less pick and roll might be a benefit. I'm not sure on that. This is just coming off the top of my head.
I don't know either. I'm part of this is more, you know, Denver, where do you set the screen on the pick and roll? The Nuggets and Jokic in particular love to do screen, rescreen. That maybe there's a reason for that, the way that teams defend them. But I do think there's an opportunity to try a little bit more of the Ding and Lillard high screens where it's like, hey, we're going to set this at the logo. So if the defense goes, you know, under, we want you pulling up a little bit more liberally. I don't know. I think, honestly, it's mostly just a mind frame. And part of what makes Jamal great is he's very comfortable in the mid-range. He's a great mid-range shooter. And he's very comfortable and actually, I think, prefers attacking the basket. And so some guys are wired threes first, basket second. I think Jamal's a little bit more the other way, or at least closer to 50-50.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I also think it's another one that's kind of I wonder about this with the knee and everything, because like Ravon says, I'd love to see him come in more off-ball screens. I wonder if that contact and that, because you're always a little bit off balance when you're coming off of screens. You're either leaning hard one direction coming over, or you're making body contact and then that shuffles your feet or whatever. Like, I wonder if that could be an element of it. And a lot of this is just like, look, Jamal's going to dictate all this. And Jamal's just like, no, I'm fine. Right? Like, if he's just like, oh, I'm fine, then this is going to be irrelevant. What I will say, though, is I do think that, you know, pick and roll, here's a good example of how to accomplish both, is just run the high pick and roll and authorize him to be like, look, if you have space off that pick and roll, take that three. Take it. You know? What I think is interesting there is typically my reservation in those shots is I'm often like, well, look, can you get a better shot if you work the clock? Right? I'm the worst shots that the shots I hate the most are mid-transition, not even full transition, just like everyone's kind of coming up court and a guy just chucks it up. I say that having watched the Rockets a lot this month and seen that so many times I wanted to scream. But the difference is like Jamal Murray is the type of player that you want taking low percentage shots because he's such an exceptional scorer. And getting him back to that level and getting him back into the zone and understanding all that. Plus, as we talked about, the gravity I think is just going to be exceptional. If he takes those and he's pulling a defender out and you give Jokic fewer defenders collapsing in to work with, you're going to find easy buckets almost every time. I think that an approach like this from Murray, if he chooses to take it, because it's going to be up to Jamal, would open up things both for Jamal, maybe improve him right off the bat, especially relative to coming off of the injury, and it's going to get other guys involved. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think this is the most interesting thing. When Jokic rolled his ankle, he invented the Sambor shuffle. Now, that's a very specific thing he did as an adjustment to a new limitation he had physically, right? I think Jamal can, in similar ways, add a little bit more comfort shooting the three as he is not quite fully comfortable attacking the basket the way he once did. If you just learn to be a little bit, pick your spots a little bit better on those pull-ups, and then when you are more comfortable, you have both, you know, sort of weapons at your disposal, I think it could be a way that he can improve himself through this injury.
All right, let's take a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about, well, we're going to get Adam's thoughts on the Kevin Durant debacle in Brooklyn, as well as there's one big reason why Denver's organization is better suited to hold out against the kind of things the Nets are going through. And his name's obviously Nikola Jokic. We'll talk about that when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for joining us, making this part of your day. We're free and available on all platforms, including YouTube, if you want to join the show. Great commentary and discussion today in the comments. Zamora, who was in last night, is with me again. Hurricane, who was in with me last night, is in here again. Trorgs is in here. J27. Ravon's with us. David Shea's with us. So many folks. Love seeing you guys every day. It's really awesome to have this community that we're building here on Locked On Nuggets on the YouTube channel, as well as the longtime listeners on the podcast. We love you guys too. Someone actually sent over a really great question. I put up the MPJ episode last night, and someone replied on Twitter with a really great idea for another episode talking about what usage and shot distribution should look like next season. So after Adam gets back from Serbia with the NBR, I want to make sure that we put that one on the docket. So we will get to those kind of things. If you guys have suggestions for the show that you want us to talk about, hit us up on Twitter at LockedOnNuggets. Okay, so moving on from Jamal. On Monday, Shams Charania of The Athletic reported that Kevin Durant met with the Nets last week with Nets owner Joseph Tsai and issued an ultimatum. Hey, you either fire Sean Marks and Steve Nash, or I want you to trade me. It was a respectful and professional meeting in which he asked for his GM and coach to be fired.
I appreciate that. It was tasteful.
Tasteful. It was, there's another context that I want to point out here. Ethan Sherwood Strauss on his Substack has commented on the fact that ESPN has not commented on the story at all since it
They have now. But it took a long time, and the comments are, let's say, Sean Marks' point of view, sort of. Like, it's, I think the headline was like, Sean Mark or Joseph Tsai shows
back
support.
Sean.
Back Sean Marks.
Look. I'll also say this, the idea of like that side being slanted is fair, but do you think that the Nets were the ones that leaked to Shams Charania that Durant threatened out? You think Joseph Tsai called Shams and was like, yeah, no, he wants me to fire my GM and my coach. Crazy, right? No. This is like, fuck it. Shams is coming from the agent side. Woj is coming at it from the team side. Woj has connections on both sides. Shams has connections on both sides. But both of them lean one direction at this point in their careers.
And we've just jumped the more important thing is we've jumped the shark. That's such a big news story. It could be like, so how do we get this information? It's not like, oh, we have information. We should share this. We should report on it. It's like, when and how and why and what angle and this or that. And sometimes it could take an entire day where the biggest story that's already out there just doesn't get commented on.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
So the reason I want to put this in a Nuggets context. I put out a tweet on Monday when I was kind of venting about the entire situation, giving my thoughts on it, that it's possible. One of the things that's brought up is like, well, look, he's the most powerful. Like, he's one of the best players in the NBA, right? Kevin Durant's one of the best players of the last of the generation. You know, he's earned the right to do this and to have this same kind of influence. And I don't even necessarily disagree with the idea of whether he has a right to or not. But I made the comment of like, Tim Duncan and Steph Curry dominated for their respective, like Duncan for 15 years, 18. And Steph. And Steph for 10 years now. Well, 10 years, 2013. But really, since 2015, has dominated the league. Both of those guys are part of the conversation in their organizations. Greg Popovich, if he was going to sign a player, would, like, this has been commented on, even from the Spurs, who don't talk about anything, that Pop would ask Timmy, like, hey, Timmy, what do you think? And Tim would give his thoughts. Tim would say, like, hey, that guy, that'll work. Or, you know, that happens. They've asked Steph Curry. They asked Steph Curry and the players about, hey, we're probably going to let go of Avery Bradley and keep Gary Payton. And they were like, what are you doing? Are you crazy? Well, it worked out pretty well. And the reason that this kind of thing is those players were voices in the room, but they empowered everyone in the organization to be the best at their job. Coaches, trainers, development staff, management, everybody, business side, everybody. Like, that's how you raise everyone up with your talent while also making sure that your views and interests are included. A front office shouldn't just ignore a star player. I don't think that that's a good way to do it. I don't have a lot of instances of that happening. Typically speaking, the owner or the management is pretty much like, I better check with this guy so I don't get fired, right? And clearly, like, that's been the case here. And I think one of the things that's important is Nikola Jokic doesn't have the championships of Steph Curry and Tim Duncan. He may never have the championships of Steph Curry and Tim Duncan because their unique situations were the culmination of great organizations, great talent, fortune, everything coming together at once, and health.
Right.
But Nikola Jokic, to me, definitely at this point in his career, several years into his prime, when he's a two-time MVP, to me reflects the same kind of approach and value. Like, if anything, Jokic could maybe be more assertive, but I don't know that he's not assertive in these conversations. But it definitely feels like, even if Jokic is like, can we do this? Can we get me a shooter or whatever it is? There does feel like there is also a very much a thing from Jokic of like, I trust everyone to do their jobs and I'm not going to try and run the team. And that's incredibly valuable. Your thoughts?
There's another layer to that philosophy, which is my job is to win with the ingredients that I'm given, which is like this idea of like, you know, Kevin Durant went to the Warriors. It was nobody wondered whether or not he could win if he joined the best team. Everybody knew the answer to that would probably be yes, like almost certainly. I think the thing that I think guys like Nikola and Giannis, they look at is the fact that I'm not guaranteed to win is the interest. That's the intrigue, is that it's like, I don't know if I could win with this group of players. That's the challenge I have in front of me. And I do think if we look back now, you just mentioned Steph Curry in 10 years. If we look at the last 10 years, you've got two philosophies running parallel, the player empowerment super team philosophy, and then you have this sort of idea of like, hey, let's. I would put Steph Curry, Giannis, Jokic into one category. They're the faces of that movement. I don't know what other players fit into that. Damian Lillard probably does, but you know, there's a couple others. And then you have the LeBron and Durant contingent. It's interesting to see what wins out. I think to most people surprise, you have the Warriors have two of these types. The Milwaukee Bucks have one. Then you have Lakers and the Cavs and maybe the other Warriors team that are the example of the other one. So you have this weird mix of both styles have won, but let's see if one wins the soul of basketball for the 2020s.
I was talking about this on Monday, that if Kyrie Irving misses the shot, if Draymond Green doesn't get suspended, if Andrew Bogut doesn't get hurt, if Steph Curry doesn't is able to beat Kevin Love on a possession, all these types of things, how differently we look at LeBron's ability to build a team, right? Because I always kind of maintain, and like that Cavs team in 2016 was legitimately awesome because everybody played.
It was honestly an all-timer that just ran up into another all-timer.
Yeah. But I'll also say this, like that 2016 team was like the apex of those guys' careers. Like Tristan Thompson has never been as good as he was in 2016. J.R. Smith was never as good before or after as he was in 2016, and on and on and on. Arguably, you can probably say the same thing about Kyrie, you know? 2017, like this is one where I'm in the minority here, and I'm okay with it. Like I'm open to being wrong on this. Like Zach Lowe considers the 2017 team to be like an all-timer. And for me, the defense was so bad the entire year and in the playoffs that I was just kind of like, I don't believe in this team to beat Golden State, let alone like even like if Golden State was mortal, I don't think that they could have
beat. You're talking about the Cavs. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, getting back to what we were talking about is, you know, the Heat, right? LeBron goes to Miami and he learns all about like they have structure it doesn't have to be top down. It is in Miami, but it doesn't have to be. But like the basketball guys run the basketball side and Pat Riley's above everything and Eric Spoelstra's the coach. And no, we're not going to fire him. And these are our trainers, right? And they have a culture. LeBron leaves and the Heat within, 2 years are back in the playoffs. And they've made the playoffs consistently since then. And now, you know, with Jimmy Butler, they made the finals and they made the Eastern Conference finals last year, right? The Nuggets, I will say this, that there is oftentimes a reworking of, well, that the organization wasn't any good until that star player arrived. And oftentimes I think that there's like an underpinning that starts to be there that at the same time that enables that star player at the same time that star player rises. Like Joe Lacob took over the team and traded Monte Ellis instead of Steph Curry and got booed for it. They also traded Draymond Green. They brought in Jerry West and they hire Bob Myers and they build what is a really good health and training staff and a really good analytics department and a great coaching staff with Steve Kerr. Like all of these things were like happened. Oh, and also Steph Curry rose as the greatest shooter of all time.
Right.
And I think it's fair to give the superstar players the largest share of those of those assessments.
Right.
But you can also say like, no, like the organization is sound too. And I think, honestly, with the Nuggets, for as many criticisms as we have of the Kroenkes, and I'll continue to have them, where's the practice facility, right? The organization itself that they built has been very good. This is a good organization. Like, this wasn't the team was garbage, but Jokic is just really awesome. Because there are a lot of teams where it's like, no, everyone's happy that works there. This is one of the big differentials, especially in summer league. You notice this?
Jamal Murray just said he wants to be in Denver for his entire career.
Oh,
or I have no plans on leaving. Or Denver is home, I have no plans on leaving. Like, the players, by and large, seem very – even Michael Porter and, like, Michael Porter's family have voiced, like, hey, this organization has been so good and fair to us.
And you look at the counter that was brought to me was like, well, the Spurs fell off. You know, after Tim Duncan retired, the Spurs fell off. Yeah, because Kawhi Leonard had a very specific situation that was like a black swan event. And if Kawhi is more like these other guys, which is that's fine. He gets to be like, I want to play in LA or be Kawhi. Sure. But if he's more like those other guys, again, the bigger point here is just, you know, maybe the bar is higher for having talent that are wired that way. I think that's true. The bar is higher for management, and that's the failure of Sean Marks. Is Sean Marks was looking for a Tim Duncan, and he got a Kevin Durant, and those are different approaches, and one's much harder to navigate, obviously, because Tim Duncan never wanted anyone to be fired in a professional and respectful meeting. But it does say that
very tasteful, very tasteful.
But it does say that the Nuggets are well set up for the duration of the Nuggets era, no matter who's in charge. And I think, you know, there's a good chance it's Calvin and Tommy Valchettis and the coach is Malone or whoever. But they're set up very well in part because not only because of how great Nikola Jokic is, but because of an approach that is closer to Tim Duncan and Steph Curry than it is to LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and Kawhi Leonard.
Strongly agree.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for Locked On Nuggets for a Wednesday. Thanks for joining us, guys. Really appreciate it. We'll be back this week with more episodes. Really appreciate you guys joining us in the chat. Make sure to subscribe to YouTube. Hit the like and subscribe button if you want to join in the chat. If not, head over to Apple Podcasts and give us those 5-star reviews. Every week, every week we get like these emails from Locked On Management about like whose ratings have gone up and who's help us out. Like, get us up there. Like,
never won that.
Yeah. We've never won that. Help us out. Give us those 5-star reviews on Apple. Helps us out so much if you guys can do that. Create other email addresses. Totally fine with you with you guys just farming this out. Do it. Totally
steal
into
a
that.
Stranger's phone.
Steal. All right. That's gonna wrap it up for this episode. Thanks for joining us. For Adam Mares, I'm Matt Moore. We'll see you guys again next time on Locked On Nuggets.